right, everybody. I hope you guys are having a great week. It is your host, Bryce Paul here, joined by my trusty compadre, as always, on the Crypto 101 podcast. It's Mr. Aaron Pizza Mind Malone.
What's up, everyone? I am back, and it is a very interesting time to be awake at the moment. Without giving away too much of what's going on, in case you're listening to this 6 months later, one world is dying, but from the ashes of phoenixes are rising, and that phoenix is Web3. And everything that encompasses that, whether it's decentralized networks or communities coming together and establishing their own governance and frameworks for living, existing, payments, all kinds of stuff is changing. And it's happening right before our eyes right now. And, you know, Bryce, we really need to do a deep dive just on what is Web3, what are the different components of that? Well,
The perfect guy. And in fact, he's joined us here today on this show. This is Ahmed Albalagi, who's the CEO and the co-founder of Biconomy.
Thank you so much, Bryce. And thanks so much, Aaron. Lovely to be here and to be speaking with you guys.
Yeah, man, we couldn't be more excited. A lot of, like Pizza Mind said, kind of tectonic shifts kind of underneath our feet as Web3, NFTs, DeFi. Now we have, you know, Twitter losing ownership to Elon Musk, who's an advocate for free speech and decentralization. He says he wants to open source Twitter's algorithms so that people could understand how decisions are being made a little bit better. This is a wild time. And so before we even, you know, like unpack Biconomy and all that stuff, you know, why did you choose Web3 to like be your modus operandi? Why is Web3 the place where you decided to stake your time?
Yeah, no, great question. I think it's so when I think about this, it always has dialed back into me just being such a, like, I'm just a student of history. And one of the biggest elements of history is that there is only one constant, and that's change. And what's great about, like, if you just, again, I luckily got into Web3 or crypto, whatever you want to call it. I actually do call it Web3 like you guys, back in 2016 through Bitcoin. And it was only through Bitcoin that I realized, okay, this could be the evolution of money, right? Like how money has evolved, this is the evolution of it. And naturally, of course, that led to, okay, you could do just so much more with, you know, what Bitcoin currently is, like a digital gold, right? And so, yeah, so that was, I'd say, the first foray. Not like, I'd say, the millions of people are pouring in just because of NFTs. So it's a different angle. But yeah, that's why I'm here, because of, you know, I think we could definitely do better in Web3 for sure.
Yeah, and it's amazing just how many hundreds of thousands or millions of developers at this point have had that same aha moment and dropped their day job at their corporate office and come together to build this thing. It's almost like a hive mind that's happening all over the world right now. But let's define some terms and paint a really clear picture for our listeners. What is the difference between cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and Web3?
There wouldn't have been Web3 without crypto, right? Amen. Like that's how I see it. And I just feel Web3, it really encompasses the broader elements. You know, in like it basically gives crypto life. That's how I see it, right? It allows crypto to be thought about in many different applications. It allows normal people to interact with Web3, because crypto is becoming plumbing, like rails, essentially, right? And the reason why there are these rails is because crypto has enabled these public blockchains to be open, to be secure, and to be, you know, for innovative applications to be built on, which now a lot of people are going into and using. And so, when we come to think of it, I really tend to believe cryptocurrencies are just an application of the broader Web3 ecosystem, which, you know, which derives of, like you said, pretty much NFTs, the metaverse, gaming, different ways of organizing and capital through DAOs and like collective workforces around the world, and of course DeFi. And so that's really how I see it. It's basically like a really enhanced version of the internet where there's just so many more possibilities, and cryptocurrency is just one application.
Yeah. A lot more control, a lot more ownership, sovereignty, over your own self, privacy. So all those good things that everybody who's
at home incentives, that's something that, and incentives, something that we've never had also as, as just, people, just contemporary been using the internet, right? We have not naturally had incentives as part of the experience,
Thing about crypto, it's truly scalable digital incentives, right? Because there's never a way to have, that sort of digital scarcity and that, ability to transfer, these unit of accounts back and forth between people permissionless and have this really good system completely digitally, completely, authenticated. And now with the onset of Bitcoin and now all the other cryptos, we've got that. And now the market's taken hold and it's just like, oh, unleash the incentives. We got yield farming. We got everything. It's like, NFT utilities and all sorts of fun stuff. But where does Biconomy sit in the midst of this whole revolution?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like to give this analogy, right? Think of a highway, right? You have this highway and there's a toll booth every 10 meters. And that toll booth tells you to pay the toll charge with coins every single time you pass it, right? Now, of course, this is, I feel, what we see is a current experience with a lot of these Web3 applications where...
Inconvenient.
Essentially, right? It's like every time you interact with Web3 applications, you need to have gas of this native blockchain in order to interact with this application. And so there's a lot of inconvenience, right? And what Biconomy is here to solve is removing away complexities that arise at this crypto transactional layer that we're seeing. And we basically build plug-and-play APIs for developers, which basically enable better user experience for their end users. And this essentially is all about having these abstraction layers, such as gas abstraction layers and cross-chain abstraction layers for the developers themselves.
Oh, awesome. So Biconomy, to me, it sounds like it's maybe something that our listeners at home aren't going to go download an app, start playing with Biconomy. And, it's not on that level. It's more on the level of like, hey, the apps that you're playing with might have infrastructure underneath them run by Biconomy, right? You won't even know that you're using them in the same way. You don't know that you're using Amazon Web Servers to get your Netflix show. You just know you're watching Netflix. Is that kind of a fair analogy? Yeah,
that's a very fair analogy. And it's really interesting because it's funny that right now there have been around 1.7 million users that have interacted with Biconomy, knowingly or unknowingly, right? In most cases, they don't know because a lot of these transactions are gasless transactions. And so end users are just basically signing a message and interacting with these applications without having to pay gas, which is really cool. But in some cases, they get to see it live because the applications have put that at the UI level. For example, the sandbox, they use Biconomy at the moment to allow for gasless transactions where they don't want
the sandbox for people who are listening. I mean, this is one of the preeminent largest metaverses in the entire, in the entire world. I saw they just recently raised a lot of money from SoftBank, among many others. So sounds like, this technology that you guys are, kind of hosting that many other applications are underpinning on, seems like it's getting some good fit, some product market fit.
Yeah, absolutely. And for us, it's we really believe that the UX in Web3 could be, way better, right? I mean, what Web3 has done very well, we've gone from 0 to 1, but how do you get from 1 to 100?
Kind of what is the metaverse missing now in order to take it to that eventuality that we're all excited about?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. There are multiple things. And I wish, you know, I could say that this is, you know, we're solving everything, because in reality, no one company could solve everything, right? Things are too early. Everyone has resource constraints, and focus is key. So of course, a couple of things, you know, that comes from the top of my head. First is interoperability. This is really important, because people have these NFTs, or there are in these different universes. And it would be great to, you know, teleport from, you know, from one to the other using the assets that you have. And so on that front, interoperability and standards on that front would become really awesome, for people to just, you know, own what they have and be able to go to. It's like traveling without needing to have a passport or go through customs, right? And be able to transfer your assets. That's one part of it. And this then relates to like identity as well. So identity generally is broken, like even traditional identity, right? There's a lot of inefficiencies, and more so in the Web3 world, because you have all these different wallets. You know, there are no credentials. People are maybe kind of building tools now, or like ways of sort of scanning your wallet and seeing the transactions that you do. But this hasn't been really organized into a way where people could interact in a very social way. And this is why token-gated NFT use cases have become such a big compelling use case, because then you could sort of actually understand who, you know, your community are, right? So that's definitely a second thing. And of course, the third thing that we're working on is the UX side, and how we can make that, you know, it's just a simple user experience for end users, where, you know, maybe they could pay gas in a subscription free, you know, in a subscription way, right? They don't need to pay it every time, or they can pay gas in a different token, or they just don't have to pay gas at all, like how it's being done at the Sandbox and Decentraland level. And so it's about providing all these different possibilities that I feel, you know, would get us from 1 to 100.
Yeah, I definitely think solving the gas problem is going to take at least 20 steps forward. Not having to have whatever that native token is in your wallet all the time is going to be a huge leap forward. What are some other things in Web3 that maybe are a little bit slept on right now? Because we're hearing metaverse, metaverse, metaverse all the time from every direction. No one really knows why, or why we need this, or why people are pouring billions of dollars into it. Well, I mean, we've tried to do VR since the 80s, and it just has not ever caught on yet.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. I mean, I think it's cool, but I don't know why this keeps getting pushed in front of the, you know, everybody, when there's just like a small sector that's like really into games and stuff like that. I've joined different metaverses. I think it's cool. I think the idea of maybe having a virtual office in Decentraland, where I'm meeting up with different people and then going back to my portals room where I can listen to music and hang out with my friends, and then having an Oculus experience where I have a date at McDonald's with, you know, 10 friends from all over the world and we just meet up at the same time. I think that's cool, but is it necessary? I think that's what they're pushing. But anyway, aside from the metaverse, what are some smaller things that have really caught your eye that are still maybe below the radar in this Web3 space?
That's a great question. So I was just in ETH Amsterdam last week, and it was just amazing, you know, just to see all the different projects and ideas that people are working on. I mean, to give like one idea that I guess is kind of out there, and it's something that I think is just so interesting, is this kind of is related to gas, but think about, if you just think about traditional commodities like oil, right? Oil is an asset, or sorry, a commodity that is, for example, purchased by airlines and many other companies at a fixed rate for in the future. Correct. And so there are naturally futures markets for oil and for other commodities. And what's interesting is in this, you know, as we're seeing more and more people go to Web3, and as gas being this sort of, you know, we could call it oil in this regard, right? There are no futures for gas, or let's say block space,
Yeah. And by the way, people at home listening, we're talking about Ethereum as gas or Solana as gas or any native token.
Correct. Thank you so much for correcting me, Bryce, there.
Not natural gas, which, by the way, is really hot right now. Yeah. A lot of people are hearing in their crypto articles, they're reading about, you know, the skyrocketing price of natural gas and oil. So just want to make sure we clear the confusion there.
Thank you so much for that. So gas in the context of blockchains are represented in block space. And so we do not have yet a market for block space futures where these validators could basically sell their block space for upfront payment now for the future, right? And this is amazing.
Why would they do that?
Why? I'll tell you why. Because A, they can lock in profits and revenue early on. And B, they, you know, it's very hard to predict where the market will be or what the price of these of this commodity will be in a year's time, right?
Mm-hmm. But they know block space is fixed and it's scarce and that there's demand for it, I guess.
There's demand, but it doesn't mean that there's always going to be the same level of demand. Right.
Right. Because there'll be varying levels of demand for transactions, I suppose.
Exactly. And what if you create 1,000 different blockchains and they all are interoperable with each other? And so it just happens to fit the needs and demand for everyone. Right. So what's interesting here is that you could potentially create things like stable gas products, right, where wallets, decentralized applications, metaverses, or whoever could basically say, yep, it's like a SIM card, right? I could pay $100 for 1,000 transactions or whatever the gas fees are. The end user doesn't care. They pay this initial $100 and the risk is on the person who is basically, you know, in the, at least going down the stack, that's where they take the risk, right? And so I think this is a key critical component that hasn't yet been built. And I think that's really exciting because it just allows the industry to really be mature, right? In this commodity that everyone is dealing with. And it will just allow us to, in a way, price products and to like make things way more user-friendly at the application layer.
Holy smokes, this month has been a doozy. Inflation hit 8.4%, ladies and gentlemen. Meta, Facebook, they announced crazy fees for their version of the metaverse, of course, surprising no one. And Elon Musk, you guys hear this? He's attempting to buy all of Twitter. So quality chaos does keep things interesting, but not when it comes to your financial well-being, because you don't always need to take big risks to get big rewards. In fact, there's a dependable asset class that billionaires have used to grow their wealth for centuries, whose total value will explode by over $900 billion, some estimates say, in the next 4 years. And its price appreciation actually beat the S&P's total return by 164% for the last 25 years with nearly zero correlation to public equities. And this may shock you, but this asset class, drumroll please, it's contemporary art. So Masterworks.io has revolutionized the contemporary art market by enabling you to invest in a portion of a painting, so you don't need millions to start diversifying. Look, we've been talking about them for months. It's a genius idea, and you guys seem to agree, having already put hundreds of thousands of dollars into their platform. So if you're still behind, you can skip their wait list today by going to masterworks.io/crypto101. Again, that's masterworks.io/crypto101. And guys, please do see some important Reg A disclosures at masterworks.io/CD. Again, that's masterworks.io/crypto101. All right, back to the show.
Really, really exciting to see this coming to life. And another thing that's sprouting up, and I don't know if this is a weed or a rose bush, we're seeing all kinds of eco funds and investment funds that are growing right now, even from companies that are not traditionally investors. They're usually keeping all of their cash in a bank on a balance sheet, but now
These are not eco-friendly funds. These are ecosystem funds.
Ecosystem funds, whether that's for a specific layer one blockchain or for coins that are listing on a certain exchange, whatever that ecosystem is, there's all kinds of investment funds now to seed new companies. What does this trend signal to you that so many people are getting into investments and out of cash? For example, you know, whether it's McDonald's or Coinbase, or, you know, some of these other companies that traditionally are not investment funds, they do other things, but they're now creating a fund just to invest rather than just sitting on their cash in a bank account somewhere. You know, we've been doing this forever in crypto, but now companies are starting to do this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's incredible because it's becoming a natural tendency for these companies to realize that one of the best ways to, you know, to gain exposure or to be a part of, you know, a bigger trend that they might not necessarily have the resources in-house to do, it's always easier to gain exposure by actually investing, right? And I think this is something that we've been seeing like traditionally in Web2, but like you said, it's been growing quite a lot. And it's funny how it's just been a thing that's just been happening naturally at the Web3 level, right? You see all these layer one blockchains, they all have these ecosystem funds, if you were to basically spearhead the growth of their layer one blockchains. But so it's funny when you kind of look into these, right? You don't know whether they're grants only or whether they actually take some tokens from the project itself. So what's interesting here is that it's great to see these things happening. Like one recent one is Stripe. They have this huge investment fund of theirs as well. But then it's like, okay, what are the incentives and also what are the drawbacks from companies, you know, investing, right? They could potentially invest in their competitors, or they could invest in others to maybe push them out of the market. And it's really interesting to see how this will happen. And in a Web3 context, there's just so much money involved that, you know, people just want to, like, in a way, hand it out just so that they're just building on their ecosystem.
They want to stake their claim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about some of the success that you guys have seen, whether that's in terms of in fundraising or whether that's in terms of some awesome milestones you guys have just hit, whether that was for product launches. But we'd love an update here from Biconomy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, recently we've just launched our version one of staking. So that's basically the staking of our Biconomy tokens, and already over 3 million plus tokens have been staked by a lot of our community. So this is great because this was like something that was highly anticipated and something that community wanted. At the product level, in terms of Gasless, we've hit over 80 applications that have been using Gasless to where they come in and subsidize their end users' gas fees. And we've already relayed around 17.5 million transactions so far. And that's saved end users over $4 million of gas fees so far.
Wow. I hope I was one of those guys.
You will be eventually. There's so many things that are connecting to Biconomy now. I was just looking through their ecosystem and it's just growing, and it's a really interesting place to maybe find some free alpha. They've got some connections to some really, really early but powerful things. And that really made me think, you know, we're really seeing a lot of advancement in the utility of NFTs. It's so far away from just being a pixelated art picture now. Yeah. There's so many things that have developed, you know, even in the past 6 months. What are some of the most unique NFTs that you've seen out there so far?
So there is definitely one unique NFT, which I just totally forgot to set a reminder for the drop, and that's the Proof Collective NFT. For those who don't know, the Proof Collective is run by Kevin Rose, who's a partner at True Ventures, which is one of our investors. And that this sort of collective is basically a collective of entrepreneurs, creators, artists within the space that sort of, you know, come in, work together and also spearhead, you know, new projects within that community. And so there are only 1,000 of these NFTs. And what's interesting is that it's become like it went from, okay, like an interesting community, which then expanded to, hey, like we're kind of accelerating these new projects that are coming out of this community, right? And basically Moonbirds, which I'm sure you guys have seen in the past couple of days, you know, spun out essentially of Proof Collective. And so what's interesting is essentially, you know, having a like, it's like this private member club that has access to the new projects, all the new things that come out of it, right? And I believe we're going to see way more of these where you're going to, you know, if you want to basically be a part of this group, you need to come in and basically own this NFT. And there'll always be this sort of price, right? Or this minimum floor that everyone keeps talking
like
about.
Like a fraternity. You got to know somebody to get into this party.
Well, also you got to pay up as well.
Got to pay up, pay your dues.
And pay up. I mean, maybe you don't even need to know anyone, right? It's just as long as you maybe have whatever the floor price is, then you're a part of it, right? And so I think we're naturally going to see more and more of these. It's also interesting to see, like, I love your guys' take on this as well. But like what traditional businesses will be doing to enable their current businesses to work with NFTs, whether it's in the form of loyalty programs, whether it's in the form of, again, token gated access, or like just free merchandise by, you know, by getting this free NFT and getting something, you know, years down the line of a free reward, right? Like we're seeing lots of companies experimenting. It's just, you know, it still feels at the edges.
Yeah, I think it's going to streamline partnerships between companies. If you think back, you know, once upon a time, you ran across a Boy Scout or a church group and they were doing fundraising and you gave them $10 and they gave you this card that had like 50 different companies on it that were local and you could go in there and get a discount.
Yeah, I remember.
I think, yeah, everyone's had that at some point in their life. And I think NFTs are going to kind of create little ecosystems like that where you get an NFT from Subway and then all their partners, you know, maybe Coca-Cola or, you know, whatever, Sun Chips, whatever else is in there. And then you have access to discounts to those products pretty much wherever you go.
And I would imagine, you know, there's going to be, you know, NFTs and stuff for, you know, frequent flyers, if you will. I know I'm a guy who, you know, comes in and you're going to eat, you know, at this place every day. And it's like, all right, if you come in 7 times in a month, you're going to get this NFT. And it like gamifies your restaurant experience or gamifies your, you know, your flying experience, right? And it gets also a little bit more customer loyalty in there between the business and the customer. So I think we're just at the absolute tip of the iceberg here for ability and what the eventuality will be.
So we work with this traditional esports company in LA. We did this huge NFT drop for them, 100 Thieves. And it was 700,000 NFT mints, all free, right? That they did for the community. They didn't have to pay gas or anything. And what was really interesting was to also see how, you know, companies like these are thinking about, you know, if they win a tournament, that's when they'll do a free NFT drop. Right. Like things like this are interesting because it could also, it's like, you know, POAPs, right? You know, as the industry calls them, sort of a proof of attendance, right? Where, you know, let's say you've won a championship, and because this championship is you won, there's this sort of NFT that's been given, which could then lead to future Like, you know, anything that
events or like, I know a guy who went to an NFT conference just because if you go, like, you get proof of an attendance, right? And then that proof of attendance was like, oh, then you could resell that because that has some type of sentimental value.
Yeah, exactly. And it could also have any sort of value to attend anything else later on, right?
Mm-hmm. Or like if you had, you know, if you had the NFT of, you know, Kobe Bryant's last game or something like that. You know, I did see, actually, this is funny. Speaking of which, I saw somebody bought the NFT of Tom Brady's last touchdown pass.
Oh, wow.
And he bought it for some, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then Tom Brady comes out of retirement and it's no longer his last touchdown. So it's like, you know, what's the truth, right? But that's, you know, that's just NFTs for you.
Well, that's great. These footballers or, you know, all these sports players, you just arbitrage and front run the opportunity there. They could just say, yeah, this is going to be my final game. And
exactly.
NFT it and make some good money and then come out of retirement.
That would be nuts. That would be absolutely nuts. Now, before we kind of close it out, I want to give, you know, the audience a little insight and a little color into, you know, who you are and what drives you. And one of the ways we kind of like to kind of get that out of you is just asking you one person that's in the crypto world that has like really inspired you. Maybe it was academically, maybe it was they pushed you to take a risk or do something. Kind of can you tell us about maybe that one person and what that impactful experience might have been in your career?
That is a very good question. Okay, I've got someone. Actually, I've got a few people.
Yeah, please.
But I mean, I do definitely want to give a shout out to Dr. Marwan. Marwan Zerouni, he's, think of him as the godfather of blockchain in the UAE. He's the one who sort of spearheaded sort of blockchain development at the government level and has been advocating for Bitcoin since like forever. At the government level. And I used to be based in the UAE. Probably we'll go back at some point. But he is a great guy who is both a mentor, a friend, and also an investor, and someone who's done a lot of good for this space, particularly within the region he you know he represents. You should get him on the podcast.
Hey, could you facilitate an intro? That would 100%, be
100%.
Yeah, let's do it.
You guys will love him. So cool. I used to run a podcast in the UAE called Encrypted. That is in the ether at the moment. It's the last episode I done for that, I think, was this time last year. But my first guest of that podcast was Dr. Marwan.
Love it. Now, last question we have for you, kind of an easy one, but of all the companies or even maybe applications, or we could extend it to protocols that are out there, is there one that you think is having just the biggest impact? The one technology, the one company that you're like, that's pushing humanity forward?
Okay, I'll say there's one, but this one isn't necessarily pushing humanity forward. I'd say it's showing, it's surfacing the things that we don't want to see that's already happening within every part of the sphere of our lives, right? And that's Curve. What's interesting about Curve is that it went from being a very simple, you know, stable coin, stable swap protocol to becoming this, you know, powerhouse of anyone could come in and bribe the hell out of, you know, rewards, you know, being sucked into a particular protocol to, you know, to expand their influence or essentially whatever they want to do, right?
The curve wars.
And what's interesting, I mean, I'm not involved in it. You know, Curve was, you know, one of our, I'd say that was our third client, right? And, you know, we sort of knew the team well and they're really cool guys. But just seeing that huge shift in the direction of how people apply and use Curve, And looking at these curve wars and just understanding how all these bribing works, like it's kind of a headache and a mess at the same time. But when you think about it, bribing happens literally in all aspects of our lives without us knowing. And I'd say that that's just like something that that did kind of hit me when thinking, okay, no, these bribes are bad, right? But in reality, it kind of happens all over the place, especially in the political sphere, in different ways, right? Not as not in the word bribes, right? I think crypto could do a better way of terming things, but it's just interesting to see that.
That's a really unique answer we haven't heard before. So yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes in real life now that will be exposed with transparent blockchain. And I think it's inevitable that, you know, everything from campaign contributions to votes, digital identity, is all going to be on chain, and that's going to make a much more honest world in the future. So pretty excited for what's to come. But thank you so much for all your time today and all your insight. And we really look forward to seeing how many more hundreds and thousands of projects onboard into Dubai Economy.
Thank you so much. No, thanks so much for the time. And yeah, for getting me on here.
You bet. All right, Ahmed, we'll bring you back on the show. Give us a couple months. We'll get a couple more updates from you. And we'll give the good people some more Ahmed. All right. Thank you so much.